This week, the Fappening 2.0 is upon us. Ubiquity takes us back to the 90s. GitHub has a flaw in their enterprise product. Just how much toilet paper do you actually need? Hijacking Windows admin sessions. Intel launches a bug bounty program. 318 vulnerable switches and escaping VMware. Expert commentary this week from Don Pezet from IT Pro TV, who's coming on to talk about creating secure online backups. All that and more on this edition of Hack Naked News. This is Security Weekly, for security professionals, by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show that brings you the security news each week. And despite popular belief, we do wear pants. It's Hack Naked News. To you by LogRhythm's NetMon Freemium delivers real-time network visibility to quickly identify emerging threats in your IT environment. NetMon Freemium is a free commercial-grade network forensics and traffic analytics solution. You can use NetMon Freemium's powerful capabilities to search against all observed network traffic, identify abnormal traffic patterns and application usage, and quickly analyze full packet captures. Take the first step towards real-time network visibility. Visit logrhythm.com/freemium to learn more and download it today. IT Pro TV, an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. Stream over 2,000 hours of up-to-date, high-quality video content live and on demand. For a free 7-day trial and for a limited time, get 50% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. Visit itpro.tv/hacknaked and use the code HN50. Welcome to Hack Naked News, episode 116 for March 21st, 2017. I'm your host, Paul Asadorian, reporting on the information security news for this week. But first, a couple of quick announcements. IT Pro TV's courses now include Sierra Update, Let's Encrypt, ITIL SOA, and ITIL PPO. Premium annual memberships include all video content as well as access to virtual labs and Q&A forums. You pay $85.70 a month or $857 per year, but there's a special offer for our listeners. For a limited time, get 50% off monthly membership for the lifetime of your subscription by visiting itpro.tv/hacknaked and using the code HN50. The InfoSec World 2017 conference is being held April 3rd through the 5th at the Omni Orlando Resort in Champions Gate in Orlando, Florida. Security Week listeners receive 10% off the conference or World Pass when using the code OS17-SW. Hear talks from Kevin Johnson, Rich Mogul, Cory Doctorow, and more. Visit InfoSecWorld.misty.com to register today. The Fappening 2.0 is upon us. The list of targeted celebrities in the Fappening 2.0, naked pictures and videos for the leaks are growing. The recent additions to this list are celebrities like WWE star Paige, actress Dylan Penn, and Arrow star Katie Cassidy. Just like the initial leaks, the dump surfaced on 4chan and soon spread to Reddit, though Reddit, I believe, is taking measures to take down these pictures as they are being posted. As dangers like the Fappening are bound to get scarier in the future, people can ensure their security by doing some simple precautions. Here's the thing, and there's a lot being debated on this actually right now. In fact, some experts from Security Weekly have just posted some late-breaking information about how the laws are actually treating some of these breaches, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about that in our expert commentary. I mean, suffice it to say, not putting naked pictures of yourself on a device such as your phone is probably a good thing to do to protect yourself from these type of attacks. However, recent information has come to light that some of these attacks happen by someone breaking into your computer, enabling the webcam on your laptop, or breaking into surveillance cameras or other such nefarious means, which completely changes the tone of this entire conversation. However, I still do caution people about this type of attack, and to protect your privacy of whatever information you're putting on your devices, choosing good passwords and using two-factor authentication really helps in many situations that cause this type of information and pictures and so forth to be leaked online. Ubiquiti has had some drama lately. They're taking us back to the 90s. They were in the news this week when a remote command injection flaw was found in 44 affected products running AirOS. There was some drama as Ubiquiti initially marked this issue as a duplicate, then promised a patch in future stable releases. The flaw was found in a PHP script that allows the admin to ping another device from the web interface, one of the more common methods and older vulnerabilities in IoT devices. In this case, the PHP server dates back to 1997. What I also find interesting is that Ubiquiti has a bug bounty program set up with HackerOne. Why would you do this knowing you were still running PHP from 1997? Anyway, I digress. The good news is the patches are coming, and the next release of AirOS version 8.0.1 is scheduled for release soon. I really do like Ubiquiti products, and I use the line of APs, the Unify line of APs. AirOS is used in a different product line, but I truly hope they solve first the communication issues when it comes to security problems and perform a code audit to get that outdated software out of all of their product lines. GitHub Enterprise remote code execution was disclosed today. Building on an exploit method previously published to Frack Magazine for Ruby on Rails, an attacker was able to successfully compromise GitHub Enterprise. GitHub awarded the researcher a $10,000 bounty, a t-shirt, a few stickers, and a free lifetime personal plan. And a place in the Hall of Fame. Pretty awesome. Patches have been made available by GitHub for your GitHub Enterprise users. A park is now using facial recognition to wipe out toilet paper thieves. A popular park adjacent to a popular tourist attractions in Beijing, China, has installed devices in the restrooms to limit the consumption of toilet paper. Apparently, elderly residents were snatching up large quantities of said toilet paper and using it in their homes, just like the salt and pepper at the restaurant and stuff. The solution was, of course, a facial recognition IoT device that admits exactly 60 centimeters of toilet paper. If you want more, you have to wait 9 minutes per person to get some more toilet paper. I want to know who had to figure out that 60 centimeters of toilet paper is the appropriate amount. They did not disclose how they came up with that particular number. It'll also be interesting to see when these devices are hacked and how a hat and sunglasses could fool the device so you can get more toilet paper. In all, I think it's a pretty crappy situation for tourists. Local Windows admins can hijack sessions without credentials. Researcher Alexander Korsnikov on Friday published a report in which he describes how we could locally and remotely via remote desktop protocol access other user sessions, even if those sessions had been disconnected for some time, with one command. What does this mean? After verification from other security researchers in the community familiar with this type of attack, it means full-blown RDP session hijacking with a single command. Korsnikov has not reported this bug to Microsoft or a bug bounty program because it exploits a design flaw, so he just went public with it. A flaw in the system in so many ways. Let's hope Microsoft gives us a patch soon. Yeah, I couldn't say that with a straight face, obviously, after the non-existent February 2017 patch Tuesday with no explanation debacle. Intel touts bug bounties to hardware hackers. This is good. The chipmaker has partnered with specialist bug bounty outfit HackerOne to create a scheme that aims to encourage hackers to hunt for flaws in Intel's hardware, firmware, and software. Intel will pay up to $30,000 for critical hardware vulnerabilities, less for firmware or software holes. The more severe the impact, the more the researcher gets paid. However, the security products from Intel, McAfee, are not in scope. A simple command allows the CIA to commandeer 318 models of Cisco switches. Cisco researchers said they discovered the vulnerability as they analyzed a cache of documents that were believed to have been stolen from the CIA and published to WikiLeaks a couple of weeks ago. In there, they found at least 318 switches allow attackers to execute code that runs with elevated privileges. Cisco warned in its advisory they published last Friday. The bug resides in the Cisco Cluster Management Protocol, which uses the Telnet protocol to deliver signals and commands on internal networks. It stems from the failure to restrict Telnet options to local communications and the interconnect processing of malformed CMP-only Telnet options. Cisco and network operations groups have been criticized for using Telnet in the past, but really don't believe the hype in this case. While Telnet is being used, it's to support clustering. Proper systems administration deems that you apply ACLs, so only the switches themselves, in this case, may access Telnet, the Telnet protocol to provide the clustering functionality. Patches will be made available, Cisco said, at an undisclosed date. You want to audit your network for usage of this protocol and apply the proper ACLs even when you do, in fact, have a patch. Hackers escape VMware virtual machine isolation at the Pwn2Own event. Escaping from a guest operating system to a host operating system has been done before, and many security researchers have been set to tackle this problem. Two teams at CanSec West Pwn2Own this year did just that, using one team using three chained exploits. That was Team Sniper, were able to escape from the guest machine to the attached host system. For its efforts, Team Sniper was awarded $100,000. The flaw used by 360 Security was a memory heap overflow vulnerability in Microsoft's Edge web browser. The browser flaw was accompanied by a type confusion vulnerability in the Microsoft Windows kernel. The Edge and Windows vulnerabilities alone were not enough. They needed to also exploit VMware Workstation Hypervisor isolation with a zero-day exploit. The 360 Security researchers also had to include that zero-day that I talked about. Sorry, that's a mistake in my teleprompter. Anyway, escaping from guest to host is possible even today. So, coming up next, Dom Pezet comes on the show to talk about creating secure online backups. But first, a word from our sponsors. A website, an external presence, employees, an office, any of these things can be compromised in attack. How are you defending these assets? Have you penetration tested these public assets? Start 2017 by taking a proactive approach to securing your vulnerable areas. Black Hills Information Security has been helping companies find their weaknesses since 2008. Email consulting at blackhillsinfosec.com and see how they can help you sleep better at night. In control of cyber risk with Tenable.io, the first vulnerability management platform built for today's elastic assets like cloud, containers, and web apps. Discover a fresh, asset-based approach that prioritizes vulnerabilities while seamlessly integrating into your environment. And improve ROI with the first elastic licensing approach based on assets, not IP addresses. Tenable.io delivers the data and context you need to secure your elastic attack surface. Start your free Tenable.io trial today by visiting Tenable.io. Has your network been breached? Cyber Reason can help you answer this question. Cyber Reason products hunt for threats within your network and eliminate them in real time. To Cyber Reason, real time means within seconds. Founded by former military hackers who don't play by the rules, they've built this experience into their platform. Harness ingenuity and imagination, not just code, to defeat attackers. Cyber Reason, disrupt the adversary and let the hunt begin. Welcome back, everyone. The 10th anniversary edition of Sauce Boston is being held this April. Training sessions the 24th through the 25th and the conference sessions 26th through the 27th. Events are being held in Boston at the Courtyard Marriott downtown. Security Week listeners get a $100 discount on either the training or conference passes when using the discount code SecurityWeekly. Visit sourceconference.com for more information. Don Pezet is here with us. Don, welcome to the show. Don's from IT Pro TV, and I'm very excited to talk about, I think, a very timely solution for online backups. Welcome, Don.
Thanks for having me back on the show, Paul. Always excited to be here and talk about, you know, stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. You know, it gets deemed the fappening, which is just a terrible, terrible, horrible name for the entire situation. And as I think the legal system is catching up to a lot of the technology that's in place, I think these type of leaks are being treated very differently. I believe also the original celebrity nude photo leak, that person I remember covering on the show was indicted and convicted and serving a sentence. I'm sure that this will happen again with the second fappening. I'm sure there's people obviously already working on that. However, it kind of brings up the question, if we don't know exactly how some of the hacks happened in this case. However, over time, we've speculated and have brought forth evidence to suggest that when your phone, like let's say you have an iPhone, is backing up all its photos to, and this is common. In fact, I use this feature all the time. Let's use a different example. On my Nexus phone, it automatically backs up to my Google account and adds all of my photos into Google Photos. That's great. I can switch phones. I can lose my phone. I still have all of my photos. When I want to access my photos for some of the shows that I do, I actually go to my Google account, download the photos, and then process them. So it's a great feature. However, it means that the pictures you take on your phone not only exist on your phone, but they're in the cloud as well. And how do you protect that system, right? There's passwords and also secure backup solutions. I'm curious how some of those work, Dom, because you've got some interesting scenarios to bring forth on how to make these backups more secure.
Yeah, I mean, let's tack one more scenario onto that, right? Ransomware. And I'm sure this has happened to you, but I've gotten calls from people in the community saying, Don, I got hit by ransomware. And not just an individual, I mean an entire company where their servers can get encrypted. And my first response is always, well, why don't you just restore your backups, right? I mean, you know, it shouldn't have happened in the first place, but it's already happened. Just restore your backups. And you'd be surprised how many times those people, smart people that have backup systems in place, and they go, well, actually, my backups got encrypted too. And so now they, you know, their backups have been attacked. You've seen that, right?
Right. Well, and here's the thing. In my scenario, they compromise my phone. I'm backing up to Google. If in compromising my phone, they steal my Google credentials, now they can encrypt everything that my Google credentials I have access to, which in my case is all my backups as well.
Yep, and that's a real challenge because, you know, the nice thing about online backup is it's so easy that, you know, you talk about iPhones, for example, where you log in with an Apple ID and it automatically sets up the backup to backup online. In the olden days, what did we have to do? We had to set up the backup ourselves, right? I had to walk uphill both ways to school in the snow with no shoes.
We had to get those things called a cable and plug it into a computer and open iTunes and make a backup, right?
But think about one of the advantages of the olden days. When you backed up to tape or when you backed up to zip drive or whatever, it was removable media. You backed up, you popped that media out, and then it sat there on a shelf offline, effectively air-gapped, right? But these online backups are so easy because they're always online. You can forget about it. You don't even think about it and you back up. So that's good. But we lose sight of the secondary, the risk that we take on by doing that. So I think from a business side, enterprises absolutely need to be thinking about securing their backups. But even on a personal side with our own backups that we do, we need to think about it because you don't want to lose all your data and find out that replicated copy you had, that it was encrypted also, or that a deletion replicated out. We've got to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think in some scenarios, Don, the two-factor authentication also helps this problem, right? Because if the attacker is able to steal your password, they don't have access to the second factor, unless that second factor was your phone that receives SMS messages. That could be bad. But like for example, I use a YubiKey. For one of the reasons why is the exact scenario we're talking about, ransomware and these other attack vectors, it's a physical separate hardware token two-factor authentication. That helps in many of the situations we're talking about, correct?
It does I'm going to say in most situations, but be careful because MFA is not always implemented the same. You've got to be really careful with this.
Believe me, I have two YubiKeys for just that reason.
Well, I was evaluating a sync provider, but a few months back where, you know, it was a company similar to Dropbox, and I won't throw out their name. It's not Dropbox, but it's somebody similar to that, where, you know, you could hook up your personal or your business and had a huge amount of storage. I think even individuals got 2 terabytes and businesses could get basically unlimited storage. And it said, hey, we support MFA. I'm like, all right, great. You know, if I can restrict people's access, and sure enough, when I logged into the web page, it required me to double authenticate. You know, I had to put in my code to get in. And so I did that. But then when I installed their mobile app on my phone, it only asked for a username and a password. And then I was able to log into the account. And I said, well wait a minute. I have MFA turned on my account and the mobile app didn't ask for it. That means there's an API vector open in that storage that didn't require MFA, which invalidates the whole thing. So I reached out to their support.
That's incredibly difficult to figure out as well, because some of the YubiKeys will have NFC and compare with your phone, but then it's up to the apps that have to support that.
Right.
And then you can trust devices in certain systems. Like I can tell Google, like basically trust my phone and it never asked me for two-factor. So yeah, you're right, there's holes in my logic.
Yeah. And so in the scenario that I was describing, what that vendor was doing is they were requiring MFA only for when you modified account settings. Like if you wanted to change your password or change your email, you had to do MFA. But as far as access to your files, it was still just username and password. You would generate a token and access it. An attacker could easily exploit that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Don, you're going to do a technical segment on backing some stuff up to S3. So talk about why that is a good solution for the problem we're discussing.
Okay, so when it comes to an online backup, there are features, things like MFA, that we need to look for, that we need to make sure that we're able to protect access to our systems. And MFA is a great start, right? So I can't just use a keylogger and get somebody's password that if I perform any action against their storage, I've got to provide it. Or at a minimum, things like deletes, right? We don't want people to be able to delete our backup or change it. Versioning is another piece that I don't want to just maintain the current copy of my data. I need to be able to maintain multiple copies as it changes over time. And that was the advantage we had back in the old physical storage days. You could rotate out tapes and you could save as much in terms of timeline as you wanted based on how many tapes you wanted to buy. Well, now when we deal with replicating to an external hard drive, you're kind of limited to the size of that drive. So going to online backups, you can usually go far, far back if you've got good versioning in place. And even that's not quite enough, because if an attacker gains full access to the account, they don't necessarily care about deleting your data. You're like with the Fappening, right? They didn't want to delete the pictures. They just wanted a copy of them.
Right.
So that's when we end up with encryption. And encryption is challenging because a lot of these vendors offer to encrypt for you. And that's well enough, except they're maintaining the keys, which means they likely have access to that data too. You can do client-side encryption, but now it's up to you to properly store those keys. And if you are a security admin or security officer, you know how to do that. But if you're Emma Watson, she probably doesn't know how to properly store a private key.
Emma Watson doesn't apply a passphrase to her PGP private key, is what you're saying.
That's right. I'm just guessing. I mean, there is the whole Swift on security thing, but who knows? So
I agree that multi-factor authentication and various encryption schemes are like just beyond the realm of most average users. And I think that's one of the major underlying problems why we have these type of breaches and why we have ransomware, is because of that reason. If we could make it easier, the world would truly be a better place.
Yeah. And then the last kind of option that we need is persistent storage, where when a backup gets taken, that it is frozen in time and cannot be modified. You don't want people to be able to modify your backup, especially if you have legal compliance. Like if you work for a hospital and you have to retain medical records for a certain period of time, you can't have people modifying that data. So you got to ensure that your backup stays and maintains its integrity. And if you're looking for those four things, it's really hard to find a consumer level product that does all four. And any one of those, if they're missing, kind of leaves you vulnerable to somebody compromising your data.
Absolutely. And so you're going to show a method that does S3 in a specific configuration meet those four criteria, Don?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's not even that hard to do. Even for a regular Joe Schmo user, you can get it set up and it works really well. For an enterprise, it works really well. I like S3 because it's fairly inexpensive and you can store as much data in there as you want. It's very robust, but it also has some other like added-on features where you can make it as secure as you want and ensure that your data is safe and that only you have access to it. And that's kind of important.
Interesting. Cost-wise, what's your kind of rough estimate in comparison for backing up to S3 versus using another commercial online backup service?
It can vary. It's harder to maintain, so you're giving up a little bit in ease of use. If you look at something like Dropbox, right, or CrashPlan or something like that, you flip a switch and it's running super easy to use. And they usually charge a little bit more. With S3, they charge usually around 10 cents per gigabyte per month, which really doesn't add up to all that much. You can stick terabytes in there.
That's just for the storage. Do you pay? You also pay per gigabyte when you access it, correct?
The way they do it is you don't pay for data going into S3, you pay for data coming out of it. So you kind of have like this data retrieval cost. And if you're just doing backups and you never need access to your backup, right, the perfect world scenario, then you never pay the bandwidth. But then when you retrieve it, you do pay a higher level.
Right. But that's a great cost model for a backup, right? And only paying when hopefully you're not going to need to retrieve it every week. Like you're getting ransomware every week, right?
You've got other problems.
You've got other issues. Yeah. So I think that's a great model. Well, I'm looking forward to getting the technical details on that. Bring that to our listeners. Don, thank you very much for appearing on Hack Naked News and talking about this particular issue.
Absolutely. Thank you.
With that concludes this edition of Hack Naked News. See everyone next week.